Thunder. So this is part two, and it's exclusive to Substack subscribers. This is part two of the Andrew H. Smith podcast, talking about his time pre and post Fergus McCann. If you're not listening to part one, go over and listen to part one. And if you are listening now, then listen now. And so, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, with him, Andrew H. Smith. But honey pie, you're not safe, so you run down
for the sake of the town. Talking of chess pieces, you could, like, to think another parlour game, one of his best ever was, we used to have to go to, he demoted me as well. I was the head of the media department at one stage, so I had to go to meetings, and I was accused of being, as you say, frivolous, because these long meetings and everybody had to say their wee piece and all this kind of stuff. So what's happening in your bit, Andrew? So I had to go to these head of department meetings, and he would be there as well. And they decided to extend bits of it. There was something wrong with the kitchen and the wolf. The wolf room wasn't big enough. So they had to use, and we had a, just outside the press room, if that, if you think about that wee room right across, you'll have seen the door. Mm-hmm. We had, that was our dark room, a dark room, you know, for doing the pictures. It got taken off us by the Wilfred, and I was so annoyed, so I could brought this forward. I never had much to say at the management meetings. And so we Fergus, his mind was away, he wasn't really listening. I said, look, I'm not happy about this, that we've lost our dart room. He went, dart room, dart room, you're playing darts, you're playing darts. I said, no, dart room, dark room. Why are you guys playing darts? So you think we'll just look at this?
After you go for a few fags.
What must they thought of us? But so that was, and he said, you know, it was like, it was his vision, and I realised that, he did, none of these people around him, as a thank you for Mark McGlone's actions, he got a column in the Celtic View.
Yeah.
And Mark, I wasn't allowed to touch it. And he showed me his contract. And he said, because I was rewriting it. Touch of that, what you will. I was rewriting it. And he brought out the contract and said, and I said to Peter, I said, tell Fergus, he stabbed me in the back. If I'm an editor, you shouldn't never do that to an editor. I'm a puppet editor then. Because 7 Day had done that to me as well, because Billy Leckie used to change my stuff. Mm-hmm. And I says, I used to sing, I'm a puppet and a string, I'm right. And he went, shut up, you know, you write like a 70-year-old or something. I used to always go on about, oh, we're trying to make good copy that sings and all this. I said, I don't want my name in this. I tried to get my name taken off the imprimatur, you know, as the editor. And I said to Peter McLean, I said, Peter, speak to Fergus. I said, he's really let me down in this. He said, no, you've not to touch it. You've not to touch it. That's in the contract. And Matt waved this in front of me, and like a little boy kind of thing. You're not doing anything to my column. I went, okay. So when people say don't touch it, we didn't touch it. So I remember going down in the Monday, and what it was, on a Monday, First Press Publishing would pay all these subs from The Record and The Evening Times and The Sun, and they would do the pages and all that, you know, just doing subbing shifts. And I went down one time, and it was a good big guy, Eddie was called, and he went, and I seen that he'd subbed it all. And I went, Eddie, no, you can't sub it. And he says, yeah. You can't let me leave it like that. I said, that's against my whole profession. I says, no. You've got to leave it. You've got to leave it. Leave every single last comma or semicolon, at least when there should have been a comma or whatever. You know? And so one of the columns was about, he was getting slaughtered, he was slaughtering Tom Boyd. It was very unusual. I suppose he thought he was still the kind of man of the people and all that kind of stuff. He said, is Tom Boyd the captain of Celtic or the captain of the Mutiny and the Bounty, right? Cap T, Cap M, Cap O, Cap P, Cap B. I was like, we're going to have that's brilliant. Stick that in. And he was talking about the team the other side of the city, the current buns, as in electric current, you know.
One to put that in anyway.
I wasn't allowed to change anything. Yeah. That was when I felt, that was the one time I felt.
But I would have thought, the type from what you've described of Fergus, I would have thought grammar, correct spelling, Fergus would be big on that.
You know what he used to do? When we used wobs, when you use a colour, you know, when you use a colour, a panel colour, mm-hmm. and then instead of a black type, you would put it in white type or yellow type or whatever. Yeah, uh-huh. He used to come in someday, I can't read it, I can't read it, you need 20/20 vision. You need so he banned wobs. So I said to the guys then, you're not allowed to do any wobs, right? So then I would come down and went, I keep telling you these things. I've got to go back and face the guy. So they would do it because they didn't want to listen to me. It's like, oh, you don't know newspapers the way we need.
Because they're thinking you're just making a stupid decision as opposed to, yes, it's the law.
So this is what the guy's telling me. This is what the, and it's his baby. And it was, you know, it was his baby. But no, it was really, I mean.
How, because you made the point earlier that I suppose people don't really think through, and I always find it quite funny how, particularly to do with football clubs, nobody ever puts it in the context of their own work environment and their friendship environment. And I always do and think, right, okay, if you transfer that into a place where I have worked, that type of thing. So despite all the challenges of the old board, people were working with them. You know, you talked about everybody who was there with the old board stays there.
Yeah.
Keeps working. So what was the culture like within the club itself if suddenly all of these people one day, you know, I suppose maybe it's a bit like civil servants who one day are serving the Conservatives and the
next. Exactly. It's exactly like that. It's exactly like that. But Fergus was an easy man to work for. Not work with, work for. You know, I remember like the day after Celtic lost to Raith Rovers in the league, and we'd been doing pieces for weeks, the impending share issue, which Michael Kelly had been in paper saying, it's going to be a disaster, it's going to be a disaster. And I thought, Michael Kelly's right, this one as well. Because if you think about it, because I think it was going to be in the first week in January or something, that was the first week, last week in November, so it was just going to end that December, so it was only a month away. Celtic, you know, they just had their longest run without a league win in their entire history, leading up to Raith Rovers. Then they had the Raith Rovers penalty loss, you know, and Paul and all that. And like, God love them, you know. Okay, so I had to go in and see them on the Monday, and I said, Fergus, maybe you need to sell yourself a bit more. Because I says, I know you don't like the sentiment, and I know you don't like sentimentality and all that. I said, but people think you don't care about the football side. That your only consideration is the best. You know, remember, he tries to run it like a business. Remember all that? It's like the guy doesn't understand football. He tries to run it like a business. Remember all these? And I said, maybe you should, can you delay the share issue somehow or something? I said, because people, you know, so you can get your personality to come over. And I said, you know, people think you're just interested in business. I said, you know, he said, I'm sitting in Ibrox last night and I'm sweating bullets. I'm sweating bullets, you know. Because a lot of the time when I'm, you know, like, can I ask him? Because you had to kind of stifle. You like he was just a funny, unconsciously funny. It was funny and he came out with things. I remember bumping into him again. Gordon Petrich, do you remember? Celtic. So Celtic went in with 1.1 and Rangers come in with 1.2, I think, and Celtic went to 1.3, and then Rangers went. I met him in the corridor, and he said, hey, Tommy's complaining. He said, I asked him, how much is he worth? And he said, 1.2, and he said, and I went at 1.3. Now he's saying, we should have got him for 1.5. You know, he said, there's a principle at stake, and I said, you know what they say? Principal, sorry, I can't afford them. You know, because it comes to Pygmalion. Yeah. Okay, that was one of his lines. Principal, sorry, I can't afford them. He said, nobody's got any principles in football. He's going about that. I remember another time in his office, and Liverpool just signed Stan Collymore for $8 million. And he said, look at this. And he had all the turnovers for clubs in the UK. And I think Liverpool's turnover at that time was $10 million. Mm-hmm. hey, 8 million a player, 10 million turnover, how's that work? You know, like, and like one time I had to take the thing, he's up to his office, at his house on a Sunday night, reeking of bacon, but it just smacked of a bachelor. You know, it was like just bachelor written all over his wee, you know, it was like a guy that would put a bit of bacon on and a roll and then, you know, and he was wearing the kind of golf slacks, you know, that you know, that kind of crimpling kind of, oh my God, I've almost got one on myself.
Well, you're Fergus's age.
I'm older than Fergus was then. Incredible.
He's the same age I am now.
He was 52, was he?
Yeah, 52, 53.
I'm 56. I can't believe that I'm older than him. He seemed about 70.
Uh-huh.
Even back then. But we were doing all the ins and outs when it was like Gary Gillespie, just been freed. I went, how's that work? I went, well, he's just been freed. He's got to end his contract and he's not worth anything. Hey, 925,000. How can you buy an asset for 925,000 and then it goes for nothing? I went, well, that's football, you know. Like, you know, like, he just didn't. He challenged the paradigms and he challenged the orthodoxies, didn't he?
But and you see, I loved everything about Fergus. Like from day one, everything. I mean, honestly, genuinely, I'd get chucked out of Celtic Park on the day that people booed him if somebody had booed him near me, because I'd have been arrested because I'd have punched them.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't comprehend. What got me about the people, I saw what happened, because you talked about that rivalry between McCann and Murray. You couldn't have had two greater opposites in terms of Murray, bullshitter, you know,
playing in the gallery,
fucko, no knickers.
Yeah.
As we subsequently found out, you know, the biggest reason one of our banks went under was him, you know. That type of person. But is hailed as a visionary and fantastic. Mm. And Fergus, who for me is a proper businessman, you know, not like that charlatan. Fergus, a proper businessman, builds a business from the foundations, has a plan. You put the foundations in place and you build the plan and you go for it. Yet the portrayal in the press was Murray's the perfect way and McCann's a charlatan, you know, the comparing Saddam Hussein with McCann.
Yeah, you know,
disgraceful stuff.
You know, people think he was thick-skinned. That really upset him. That really upset him, that one. No, but you know, people think you could say anything to him. And I don't think it quite upset him the same way, but the booing. We got him a couple of days later. I was at the Evening Times by then, but, you know, and he was kind of making light of it and all that. But, I mean, it got to a lot of people that thought, my God, how dare you? How dare you? But he'd be getting booed now. The Green Brigade would be holding up effigies of him. Like, you know what I mean? Like flames coming out of them if he was here now. Let's be honest about it. Although the Green Brigade wouldn't be here now if he was here now.
they wouldn't be. The thing that frustrated me was these fans who bemoan the press, and the press are out to get us, and the press are doing that. And I remember standing there thinking, and the only reason you're booing him is because you bought into every single word of the people that you bought into, the very people that you say that you can't stand, i.e. the press. You bought into it all.
Yeah.
And this narrative of Murray's fantastic and, you know, speculate to accumulate nonsense, you know, which is, it's the, you know, mother, because the whole problem was the whole of Scottish football, with the exception of us, decided to speculate to accumulate, which then meant the only way that you could be pushing ahead of everybody else if you speculated to speculate to accumulate. And it was just this downward spiral. And I just remember being so frustrated because I thought, you've bought into the very narrative that you are sitting here decrying. You bought into it and you're criticising Fergus because Fergus didn't go in, raise all the money that he did from the share issue and then just blow it,
I know,
on the team. And I understand why people wanted him to blow it on the team. But,
do you know,
he needed to put the foundations in place. And the thing about it is, he never lied. He never bullshitted. He didn't, like David Murray did. He said, I'm going to come in, I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to go. Yeah. Do you know what Fergus McCann did? He came in, he did that, and then he went. He put the foundations in place and spent the money on the stadium because we needed to spend the money on the stadium instead of putting it on the pitch. Whereas, I always got the impression if Brian Dempsey had been the main guy, Brian Dempsey would have spent it on the pitch.
Alan McDonald did it. Remember, he said, we've just become a banker for players, because Ael Berkovic, that was one of only two or three times in the entire history that Celtic had, like, I think it was the at that point, it was the biggest signing ever, you know, in Scottish football, 5.75, I think it was. So, like, and he splurged the money, and there wasn't going to be any money left. Like, that was almost the reaction to Fergus, because obviously he came in straight after that. And then it did go that way, and then it set Celtic back for 2 years. But you know, one of the most poignant things, and you're saying that, is like, and I tell this, and people can believe it or no, but this is how it happened. We went, so 6 months after Raith Rovers, like a month after, 2 months after Raith Rovers, the share issue is oversubscribed by 100%, and Joe goes down to get him. Joe goes down to get him. And because of my little beefs, I said, Joe, ask him, what does he think now about Michael Kelly? What do you think now about Michael Kelly saying it was going to be a disaster? And he said, well, I'll ask him, because I was trying to get the stuff ready, because I think that was a Monday night as well when it finished up. And we first went, yeah, the dog barks, but the caravan moves on. I mean, I know people have said it subsequently, but that's the first time it was used. And I went, oh, that's our front page. That's our front page. I went, that's brilliant. And Joe said, no, I've not. He says, we'll not use it. I went, what? Oh, what, we can't no use that. We can't, you know, use that in the front page. Even that, I was getting a bit more tabloid, but I thought it's too good. And I hadn't heard that phrase before. I know it's used quite a lot now. Yeah. It's used quite a lot now, but you hadn't heard it back 30 years ago. You really hadn't. So I said, go back down, because Fergus liked Joe. Because he got to like me less and less, because I used to turn up my Monday, and we would be sitting, he would be saying what we thought he was going to do and all that. I was talking to him, and I would say, yeah, you're right. He said, you're not writing that down. And I went, oh, I'm not a secretary. I said, this is an interview. It's like, so then we'd start to pick up the phone, and I went, I want Joe. So by the end of my time, like, he was having less and less to do for me. It was too challenging for him or something. But so I said, Joe, go back down. He likes you. Go back down. And good old Joe got him to agree to put it in. So that was the front page of The View, that one. So we did that. So you could tell things were going, even though I'm still miserable being at Hampden, but you could tell things were going the right way. Yeah. And then that, but you knew it was also unravelling behind the scenes. I mean, I'm not saying that one. But like, so we got to the Scottish Cup final, worst Scottish Cup final ever, you know, like, and somehow Celtic got there, and somehow Peter Grant played when his knee should have been in a brace and all that. And he got that, just dragged them by sheer willpower back to Celtic Park. And everybody's like, you know, again, it felt another weight lifted. It felt like, you know, the kind of, felt like the adjunct to the takeover day.
Yeah.
This is a new Celtic again. That felt like a new Celtic. Behind the scenes, that felt like a new Celtic, in the sense of a Celtic that could win trophies again after 6 years. So everybody's kind of, oh, celebrating with Tommy and all this. And I remember Fergus, he was just standing. I'd maybe had a few. It was quite early on, but I'd maybe had a few. He was just standing himself. I went over, right, and I hugged him. I said, this is your triumph too. This is your triumph too. Because he was getting, almost kind of getting missed out in it. And he left about a minute later, right? He went home. And I thought, God, you like, I don't know how you describe it, but he's not a guy, like, see, when I hugged him, it was like physical contact, you know what, you know, neurodivergent people. I think you can safely say, he was neurodivergent, can't you? He is neurodivergent, sorry. And the best, I know there's a bad way, but I just mean that. I just mean he wasn't a neurotypical person. Just in the way that he saw life. I don't think he was teetotal.
No, I'm just wondering if what he was doing in that moment, standing there, was just watching people, the self-satisfaction that he'd made all these people happy.
Exactly that. But you know what else he used to do? He used to, see when they were building the stadium, he would walk round the pitch. And more seats get built, more areas, he would go and sit in different seats and all that. he understood the bricks and mortar more than he understood the, as my marriage counsellor said, the squishy stuff. You know, he wasn't good with the squishy stuff. But it was like, you know, this was his, that's his legacy. And what a legacy.
But I can sort of, I mean, when you mentioned the Shear issue, one of my mates always goes on about the fact that he just had a newborn and then he just got made redundant. And he remembers walking with the pram to the postbox to stick his application in with the 500 quid.
Yeah.
And as he let go of it, he just remembers thinking, what the fuck are you doing? And at the time I was a student and I managed to get the money together with the help of my dad. Because for those of us who were around at the time, everybody I've spoken to, there was an element of, because we couldn't do what we'd done for the previous 3 or 4 years of agitating the board. And then when it turned round and said, right, you need to stand up now, we couldn't then say, oh, it's not for us.
I know.
We had to. We had to deliver because we'd all agitated and said, you're wrong. And that we, the fan base, are right. So when Fergus then came in and said, right, okay, you with me? We all had to say, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, that was another one. Just before the, about 6 weeks or so before it, this year, she was kind of, it was going on stream again. Walking across that landing bit, you know, there's that landing bit. And he just, you know, he said, do you want to buy a dead guy's shares? I went, what? Because there was some that had been unassigned.
Yeah.
So you could get certain, he said, preferential rates. With the people, like, I was one of the few, I think, within the club that could afford, because the wages were so terrible. You know, I got help with my dad, but because I got, there were also preference shares. So, you know, I've still got a dividend every year, you know, like Dermot Desmond and his dividends, he's paid the whole $4 million back, eh?
Yeah, yeah.
And then some.
So, I can understand, I mean, many people of my generation, when the new stadium was getting built, I used to drive, and you'd maybe go along London Road, and then you turn down into, what's one of the streets?
Oh,
Nuneaton Street.
Nuneaton Street, aye.
Where the buses used to park, and you turned down into Nuneaton Street because it was a bit where you could just have a brilliant view, and then you would find that you were maybe the fifth car that was doing that.
Yeah.
that we were always, I mean, this is why I hate the phrase the Celtic Dan, all that stuff.
Yeah,
that's,
yeah.
That's just by young people who are jealous that I think that there's, yeah, not the same. I think sometimes the Green Brigade are trying to recreate something.
They are. Well, they're trying to create the early 80s when there was a new song for every hunger striker that had died. No, that was my formative years going to the jungle. That's what was happening. We had a new song for every hunger striker that was died. And that was quite a big part of my politicisation because it was so keen. I mean, if anybody's watching this town then on the TV, it's very much that time, 1981.
But you would I can understand Fergus going and sitting in every seat because it was an element of, it's 500 quid back then, 30 years ago, decent amount of money. You were looking to see what your 500 quid had bought you. That we'd created this all together as a community. We'd created this club.
Yeah.
Led by Fergus, the Pied Piper of Fergus who'd led us there.
Yeah.
But we created this and it was ours that we were building.
Yeah.
Okay, we went there like 100 years previously with the old Celtic Park where, you know, it was a sweat, it was our financial sweat that we'd done it, but we created it. So I can understand if I was Fergus, I would have done that.
No, we all did. We all used to go out and we did loads of progress reports. We were doing all the latest pictures and all, because people, I was down in Liverpool a couple of weeks ago and I went along to see Stanley Park. I went along to see the new Everton ground because it's taking shape. There's something quite magical about football grounds when they're taking shape, and they're all pretty good design now. They're all space age design, yeah. So I can understand that. But 35,000 excellent seats, 35,000, and his obsession was no pillars. Mm-hmm. His obsession was no pillars, and he almost got there. I think if you remember,
There's a couple of pillars up back.
You know,
about three rows from the back.
Yeah. Do you know, but his idea was to take the... It's really weird we're having this conversation today because for some odd reason, my friend was over for Mallorca this week, and he's an 11-year-old boy, and we took him to the Ford cinema to see a film, and just as we were going in, we were a bit early, and he said, why don't we go over to the graveyard? He said, I've never been there. You know, the graveyard that backs on it. Yeah. And I was telling him, and he said, you've got to tell that story somewhere. Because Fergus's idea was to dig up the graves for 15 feet so that the Celtic Park could be pushed back 15 feet, and therefore you would have no need for the cantilever thing. Because if you see the graveyard, like, and we were looking at some of the graves the other day, 1932 and all that, one of them was actually really well tended, it had flowers on it and all that, so some of these great grandchildren or whatever are really still tending that grave. I can understand why people don't want their graves dug up and moved 15 feet, but you did think there was a lot of people saying, nah, he was getting blocked at every turn. Mm-hmm. There was people wanting, and the other famous one was, but so he has to, so the great, so the actual Celtic Park, if you sit up at the top of the North Stand, like the last seven rows or whatever, you're 15 feet within the airspace of the graveyard. But people were complaining even about that. It's the airspace of the graveyard. It's not like you're dropping drones or anything, like, you know. So, but his other one was, if you remember, the temporary stand had to go up because there was obviously three sides were, well, two sides really in the old stand. So the temporary stand. And they'd worked out that once that stand went up, it would be so many feet high, so the TV aerials, because there was loads, rather kind of, there was a couple of estates back there. Mm-hmm. I remember, put this way, I left my car there one night, and I'd forgotten that I'd left my car when I was still in the work with the office. Somebody says, you haven't gone back to get it at 7, so I went back, and those three wee guys jumped on top of it, like three of the windows smashed. And it's like, in the East End, it's no like, hey, hey! And then they all run away. I was like, hey, you're my car. And, you know, they'll jump them down the top of the bonnet.
Uh-huh.
The thing was wrecked. It was a trapped car, as it turned out, so it didn't last much longer. Because another time, up at Celtic Park, there was a guy stealing a car radio. People used to steal car radios. So he's yanking it out. And I went, hey! And the stewards were all standing around. I went, why are you not doing in? And the guy turned around, I need a needle. Do you know hypothermia? And it was like, I take it if you want, you know? And it's like, sorry, guys, understand why you're not going to need it. Because that was the thing that, you know, with the Canadian thing, and if you remember early 90s, like people would, like that, you could have a needle looking at you know, an addict would have it. And then that's almost as big a weapon as any. Because then they were just like, we'll just take the car stereo as much. But anyway, so around the back of those estates, so they said, our TV signal's going to get goosed. We're going to entirely lose our TV signal. What you got to do about it? So there was a good delegation up to see McCann and all that. What you got to do about it? You'll need to give us compensation. And he went, oh, no, you're right. So he said, anyone who wants compensation, he said, I'll give you a free TV licence. All you need to do is bring up your current one and I'll renew it for you. Let's just say I don't think he was out of pocket on that one. Oh, he was a crazy character. But that was the one time, as I say, like...
Somebody told me a tale about the temporary stand. That there was a cost involved if we had it there permanently. So it used to get taken down.
Yeah.
Is that true?
I think there was something of that nature.
Did it get taken down at the end of every game? And then we'd go away, like, to be used at, like, Open Championships.
Yeah, that was it, aye, because then you could, like, it could be rented out. Because otherwise you would be renting out the whole time.
Yeah, so basically Fergus, and typical Fergus fashion, rented it for the game.
It's the same way you rent it for the week or something like that, for 3 days or something.
I can't remember who told me. Basically they were wanting, well, we'll rent you the stand for the season. I don't need it for 9 months. I just need it on that day.
Yeah.
But then we need to take it down and put it back up. Not my problem. Because I only want... I think he'd obtained what their day rate was or something like that. So they then extrapolated that out and said for 9 months, no, you've calculated it wrong. I'm only using it for 22 days. Yeah. They were like, no, because it's got... No, that's your problem. Because you've told me the day rate's this, so I'm only going to rent it on 22 days. And they had to, like, put it up and bring it down and put it up and bring it down. And it'd be used for concerts and
exactly
championships and
yeah, exactly. Like, but I mean, he had a he's difficult. But see, when you look back and managers, did he have any good relations with managers?
Well, he did have a good. I mean, straight
football
away,
managers.
Yeah, so straight away he gets rid of Lou McCarrie.
He says, I remember, I say, he wanted me to go as a stenographer at the court case, you know, the unfair dismissal. And I went, I can't do that, Fergus, aside from the fact that I'm not a court reporter. I said, I really like Lou McCarrie. And he said, hey, I like Lou, I just didn't see him.
I mean, was it just basically because McCarrie didn't live in Glasgow, so...
And obviously...
Was it not, you know...
Obviously, his son was, you know, his son that... took his own life, was obviously having a hard time.
Right.
And he was trying to spend as much time there.
Right.
And, because, but I brought it to a head totally unwittingly. Because we were, it was the June, one of the June views, and it was really difficult because there was nothing happening. I said, is there anything happening, Lou? I said, I need a front page. Desperately need a front page. He said, we've been, I'll tell you what, he said, actually, now you mention it, we've been invited to Malaysia. I said, oh, great. Celtic Head East. He says, we're going out to Kuala Lumpur. We're going to go to Kuala Lumpur in August, or late July, early August, for a pre-season. I said, that's brilliant. That's exactly what I was looking for. So then the view comes in on the Tuesday. Phone call Fergus. What's this view? What's in the front page? He hadn't told Fergus. That was used in the court case, right? And I said to Wee Lou, I said, I'm so sorry. I said, I didn't even mean to get you in trouble. Didn't mean to get in trouble. You were trying to do me a favour by giving me a story. And then, like, this all backfired on you. Because Wee Lou was brilliant, but, like that's... But you were always going to... That's, Wee Lou wasn't any different. People bring in their own managers, don't they?
Ah, yeah. But you would have thought, actually, you know, when Fergus was doing, you know, like, the he got the beanback of the... Inter Milan.
Yeah. He lost a lot of money on that, didn't he? But
you would have thought McCarrie was at Celtic around that time.
Yeah.
That actually McCann would have had some sort of sentimental attachment to McCarrie because he was a player at a time when he was most active involved in Celtic.
Sentimental attachment. Well. There's a phrase. What do you think that's no, Fergus?
It's just basically business.
It was Fergus. Oh, and the business is the trigger for the betterment of whatever it is. That there's the sentiment, if you know, if I'm making any sense.
Uh-huh, yeah. That we've got to achieve this goal over here.
He didn't want emotions at play. Do you know, because the other time that really upset him, so the summer of 94, this is all before Peter McLean, I suppose, was kind of being a buffer. Peter became a kind of middleman for him with the outside world at Celtic. So I says... Yeah, I've done my budgets. They made me do budgets and all that before I get demoted. But, so I did the budgets and I budgeted for, I think it was £400 for the pre-season. But then I thought, oh, we need a photographer there because they're going to be wearing a new strip. We need to get all our stock and good weather and all that. And I went, I'll take £200 out of the budget. So I phoned up the secretary who would be booking it. I said, book another one. Me Fergus found out about it. And he went, he said, you told me it was only £400 and it was only one person. Now I see there's two people. Two people aren't going. And I went, this was the night before. And I said, but Fergus, I've already booked the flight tickets and I've booked the hotel and all that. Doesn't matter. So, you know, a principle from him again. So, so it just stayed. The £400 flight ticket stayed in the drawer, and I always kept it in my top drawer to remind me how he was, you know, for the next kind of 3-4 years I was there, that he was there, because that was it. It was his way.
But so it sounds like he very much micromanaged.
I suppose this is all the early months, I suppose, isn't it? It's all the early months before the stadium was on stream and before he'd maybe had people in management positions that
so he maybe put, just didn't trust anyone.
He'd put there.
Yeah. I suppose if you're taking a business that's failed and then you go in, the first thing you're going to do is take the attitude of, well, the people who are here are failed.
Yeah.
Because, well, they've run it badly, so I can't trust them to financially run it now that it's my money in place, so I'm going to oversee every penny. I suppose that would be your...
But then, when... So, Joe was phoning us to Germany during that pre-season tour, and if you remember that summer, they'd failed to get David Ginola. They'd failed to get the Swiss player. And then it got to Andreas Thom.
Mm-hmm.
And so Joe's on the phone, he's in the office, and Tommy's on the phone to him, kind of thing, I think, and he's saying, go and put pressure on Fergus. Go and go through and see Fergus, say, we have to sign this player. I'm like, what's this got? You know what I mean? Why are we getting involved? That's the kind of things that you put pressure on them. Because if you remember, the place was, again, they were going to torch it, like the supporters.
Yeah.
They were going to torch it. Fergus, he didn't get any kind of honeymoon. If you remember that first date, that was the only other time I saw him really upset. It was you remember, it's 39,000 home to Motherwell. And he was paraded around the pitch. Remember the first Celtic lost?
Yeah, I remember.
And then they were playing... I think it was maybe...
Was it Dougie Arnott's
score? They were terrible.
Yeah.
So the next game, they had a rearranged game to play against Raith Rovers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, all these people said, yeah, we were only boycotting because that old board. So Celtic play Raith Rovers midweek. Simon Donnelly's first game, he scored twice. He was brilliant, if you remember. And we really likened him to a young Ken O'Gleish, which maybe didn't help him, but 17,000. And I remember Fergus either the next day or whatever. Hey, what happened to that 20,000? Where are they gone? Because then he was immediately panicking, thinking, we don't have any goodwill. There's no reservoir of goodwill. Because when people say like Celts are changing and all that, and I'm not dissing them like good guys, but you know what? It's not people movements in football that get rid of boards and managers and whatever. It's results. Because I always say to them, and if you think back when Not the View started. Not the View started, I think, was it 87? And they were railing against the old board then. But what happened was Billy McNeil came in and it just was touched, just anointed for that season.
Yep.
The club were as badly run in 87 as they were in 93. They just weren't getting away with it anymore. Yeah.
You know, it was just, there was a momentum. There was a mood. There was a momentum.
But they were building that bloody sports barn of a frontage in Celtic Park.
Leg.
Yeah. Celtic were great.
Celtic were great. I'm just meaning there was a whole load of positive things or
things
that all came at exactly the right time.
But they squandered, the amount of money they squandered in that frontage. As I say, that's what people say. It always looks like, well, you go and play five-a-sides, doesn't it? And whatever you think, you go to Rangers and there is a kind of certain kind of ornateness, but the front of Celtic Park...
Don't get me started.
I know you've written.
Even now, anybody who's ever been in any corporate person who goes in the front door, there's a battered green sofa in the front left-hand side you go in. That, as I say, any time I get to meet someone that's seen you at Celtic Park, did you get that off Gumtree?
Yeah.
Because that's what it looks like. Gumtree or somebody's dumped it at the side of the road.
Yeah.
It's just not... And as we are pointing out, I mean, that frontage, which is the most modern bit of the new of the main stand, that frontage is 35 years old, built by a skint, hard up board.
Yeah,
and we just
who get ripped off for it. By the way, that's what the stories went when I started not long after that. I was like, how much? Because again, my naivety, I didn't actually know what the guy meant. He said, "Oh, see the guy that." Major, I don't know if I can say this, but he said, oh, you know, I think the people that were involved in building that, he said they were wearing 10-gallon hats. I didn't know what he meant.
So, if I bring it into an end...
Yes, yeah, sorry.
Did you outlast Fergus, or did Fergus outlast you?
I didn't. And he came along to my... Because my timekeeping wasn't the best, and he came along to my farewell.
Uh-huh.
He handed me a clock. Right? He handed me a clock. And they were taking a picture of us. I said, Fergus, let's have a hug and pretend we like each other one last time, right? It was only a joke, but he didn't take it well. I always remember, he didn't take it well.
Because
I did, there was a certain affection, I suppose. no, saying, but like people were a wee bit, people say, like, we're always saying, I'm a wee bit different. So people are a wee bit different, you know what I mean? Like, you know, you see, you just don't necessarily follow the kind of social mores, you know. But then I was supposed to come back to the club because Donald Cowie come back. That was my old editor who'd been subsequently editor in Scotland Sunday and Sunday Herald. He come back, and then I was going to be coming back as a writer without portfolio. They said I would be doing a lot of podcasts and all that. They were offering me a lot of money. It was the Alan McDonald time. Mm-hmm. A lot more money I was on with Scotland Sunday. Then the next thing I heard, it's been blocked at board level. What? They say you're a maverick whose timekeeping and attire leave much to be desired. That was what I said. I was really angry with Donald. I said, you shouldn't be offering me a job. It wasn't in your gift to give me. Mm-hmm. I actually nabbed him about that the other week as well. And he's saying, oh, wasn't it quite like you thought? I said, you offered me that job for right good money and then they didn't want me.
You see now how different it was when Alan McDonald was here to Fergus. Someone once told me that under Fergus, if you needed a computer and you would ask and you would probably get told no. Suddenly Alan McDonald comes in, you ask for a computer.
You get two.
Just in case the first one breaks.
Yeah. Get a bigger one. Missed that time. I always missed the gravy trains. You know, the gravy trains were always left the station by the time I got there. Student life, no.
So is there any one big misconception around that people think around Fergus being there, around the takeover, that you've all, every time you hear this tale, you think, that's just not what happened?
There was I went to see the Celtic Story. Fergus was there as well. And obviously they've added the Fergus McCann stuff coming in. And apparently he was sitting there. That's not what happened. You know, that was just last year. But I'm sitting there with my boy, my 14-year-old. That's not what happened. That's not, and my brother saying, that's not how it was. You know, this... Like, he never wore a bonnet that much. He never wore the bonnet and all that. Oh, yeah. He never wore that much. That's what used to annoy me. Like, I know it's a really small thing. So but people didn't quite get his humour. That's... There's a lot of humorous moments. You know, I remember when one of the things he fell out with Tommy over was how long they were taking to get in Rico Anoni. Do you remember that one? Mm-hmm. And they were haggling over it. He was haggling it down to 250 or whatever. And they wanted 350. And he said, you know, like, no, I'm not paying. That was what it was. You don't pay more than someone's worth. And he said, it was just before a cup tie. I think we were playing Raith Rovers in the Scottish Cup. And he said, what, can we no beat Raith Rovers without Rico Anoni? You know, he said, hey, we're in trouble if we don't. But there was a press conference and they were saying, are you going to have crunch talks with Tommy about this signing? Hey, why is it always crunch talks? Why is it never just talks? Why is it always crunch? And the same press conference, they come in and, you know, like, photographers, he said, well, I put my head in my hands first. So we'll go on. I really got it, but it's like, but people like him, they're no natural leaders, are they?
No, because to be fair, I think it's the nature of anybody who really is a self-made business person.
Self being the operative word, yeah. Isn't it?
So they've done it not by being part of a corporate culture where they've just been the leader of a team. They've been someone who ultimately every single decision that gets made, even if they are running a business, every single decision that gets made has to get filtered through them.
Yeah.
You know, to the extent of, you know, should we buy some more toilet roll today? Level of decision making goes through that person. And the longer that someone like that is that person, the longer I would imagine you would then get into the mindset of my decisions are the right decisions and every other decision people can have or opinion people can have, but they're wrong. And it's not...
That's wearing after a while, you know?
And it's not they're deliberately arrogant or, you know, it's not that they're deliberately that way. It's just if you have become successful, it's through, you know, it's an evolution of your mindset.
Yeah.
You've had to evolve into being that person who just believes that they are right. Because the amount of times, probably in your formative period of running the business, there will have been occasions when you've gone, all right, I'll go with your decision making. and it's been wrong. You know, if you're like, if you are someone who's successful, you defer. I can imagine you defer to someone and then they're wrong. Eventually you start to go, nah, my way is the right way and any other way is the wrong way.
And that was difficult.
And people would find that difficult to work with.
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
Because anybody who's in a reasonably senior position will feel like that they are not in a senior position, because they'll feel like they're not getting a say in any decision making.
Because, I mean, there was one, he decided to have the Christmas night out without partners at Celtic, and they all went nuts, all the players and all that. Like, I knew why he wanted it in the afternoon as well. It's more like an office party.
Yes.
That's the way he was seeing it.
Uh-huh.
Rather than we'd been used to nights in the Grove and all that. I remember we get caught, and it ended up in Jerry McNeice calling in the Sunday Mail, because we were dancing down the corridors of the Grosvenor singing Sack the Board, Sack the Board. That was maybe 92 or 93. And it was like, oh, Kevin Kelly used to always, this was the Pools night out, he used to always, at a certain point in the evening after a few sherries, he would start to play the piano, you know, like a Les Dawson type fashion, type style. I thought, you have to see this to believe it, you know. But anyway, so he said, all right, I think it was out on the Tuesday. And so the View, isn't it, the next Wednesday? He said, you've got to do it something in the View the next week. I went, no, we're not doing something in the View the next week. It's gone. It's a one-day wonder. But it had, I mean, because he did look a wee bit like Scrooge, so it was perfect for the Sun. Scrooged kind of thing, you know, it was the front page. No, you've got to do something on this. And I fought it, and I fought it, and I fought it. And eventually I lost. So you're doing it. And I had to, and I said, we're just dredging it up now. A week later, we're dredging up. So we had to start this, the Media Awards. So we did this, like, us ripping the knitting out of the Sun back and all that kind of stuff. And we'd, and other journalists, because then I remember we had one about the Herald, about hundreds had run on the park at a Celtic Rangers game, and it turned out there was four people. Right? So I was going, like, what was he, Paul, who became, gone quite well, but he went to the Rangers News, but then he became a political guy, Paul. But it doesn't make things easy for you when you're like, you know, we're writing about the, like, we're having to rip the knitting out of the people that were actually, like,
what is it they always say, never start an argument with someone who buys ink by the gallon. It's
so you never, he would never listen. You know, there was only one time he had this early idea, 3 for 2. So if you come to the Aberdeen and Hibs game, we'll give you the Raith Rovers game free. So you buy a 3-match package. It's only the cost of 2. I said, that'll never work. I said, people just don't care. They know they can get into the other. I said, it'll just not work. And he said, no, I wanted it. He'd done all these big adverts and all that in the View and all that. He was dead excited about that wee bit of marketing. Dead excited about a wee bit of marketing, you know. Yeah. And he went, it didn't work. I mean, you said it wouldn't work. It's the only time you ever said it. And I'm saying, I'm not trying to say any of these stories for a position of equals. It's just somebody you come, you know, you come, because, and because, as I say, because he wanted to use the Celtic View, then he would kind of know us better than he maybe know other people in the park, just because you're working with them. You know, you want to know what's going on here and what's going on there, you know.
One thing that I always thought Fergus did get right about the Celtic View, I really got the impression that Fergus's attitude was, this is the club paper, so this should get every story first.
There was we get the shitty stories first, like Boys Against Bigotry and all that, you know, which we would give it a splash. I was, you know, that was my most proud moment, getting involved in that, because I thought, at last, someone's wanting, you know, his famous phrase, before you look out the window, look in the mirror. And that's so right. And that was what Boys Against Bigotry was about. And I got hate mail for that and all that. Police get involved and all that before people could troll you online and all this, because, I backed it wholeheartedly. It wasn't, I wasn't drag kicking and screaming with that one. This is what I've wanted, and this is what I'd written about, obviously, sometimes my programme columns and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I thought that's where I really admired him. He sat in that press conference and he talked about Catholic bigots. It's like, these are your customers. Calling out your customers. Daring to call out your customers. How many people do that?
But you know what?
For something that was a principle of, again, for something that was deep seated, you weren't. It's not like Ratner doing it or whatever. You know.
But what I got, which I always felt this was the difference between the people who created Rangers, the new Rangers, and Fergus, was Fergus for me took the attitude, and that was, if I'm going to transform us from a club with an average attendance of 17,000 to an average attendance of, that fills a 60,000 seat stadium and has us with the money that has us competing with David Murray without doing all the tricks that that guy's up to, I'm going to need proper money in our club, which means I'm going to need to attract middle class supporters, and I'm going to need to attract businesses who want to put money in the club. So I'm going to have to go for the higher value pound. And the people who bought Rangers decided to go after the knuckle draggers.
Yeah.
And so I always felt the difference was, Fergus said, see if your pound's a dirty pound, because I don't want it, because I don't need it, because I need the higher value pound. And then they went in and they chased the knuckle draggers money. That for me was the difference.
But that almost sounds like an element which he was accused of, but cynicism, like as if he was doing it for a business perspective. I don't think he was doing it for a business perspective.
No, but
he was doing it because, like me and many others, he cringed hearing the songbook.
No, but what I mean, I don't mean it was only because of that reason. I think what he was thinking was, I want the best Celtic football club. A bit like, you know, any time I get the good fortune of speaking to people senior at Celtic and I harangue them about stuff. My point is always, there's a selfish reason why I'm haranguing you. Because I just want Celtic to be the very best version of Celtic can be. And the selfish element is so that I can then watch the best football team on the pitch that I can get.
Yeah, yeah.
So what I mean by that is, he wanted the best version of Celtic.
Yeah.
That he thought it could be.
Morally, but there was a morality to that as well.
Because then he's enjoying it because it's morally the best place, and it'll be enjoyable for all the other people that are there because they'll be at the best version of Celtic. And the other knock-on effect of that is, that's financially how it'll be the best version of Celtic.
Yeah, 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 yeah. But I would say, hand in heart, I never felt it was, there was a kind of business motive for it. I always felt it was like, as I say, like many of us, he cringed at certain elements of the song, but he cringed. Like, you don't, well, like, what was it you used to, well, Peter MacLean probably wrote it for him or whatever, but it was like, you know what I mean, a Scottish club proud of its Irish roots. But that's what he wanted it to be, kind of thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We haven't got that, like, the club haven't got that balance right, or the sport often haven't got that balance right even now, have they?
No, but that's life. Anyway, that's been great talking about Fergus, and I could reminisce about Fergus. Honestly, I remember Jock Brown. I remember Jock Brown saying, you know, when he was still at Celtic, Fergus McCann, and this being ridiculed by the likes of Hugh Keevans.
Yeah.
In years to come, Fergus McCann will be up there next to Jock Steen and Jimmy McGrory and Brother Walford as one of the four or five key people in the history of this club, and being slaughtered for that at the time. And again, at the time, I remember thinking, That was as obvious a statement as the nose in the end of your face.
Yeah, I defended Jock Brown because I was then by the Evening Times by then. But then Fergus appeared at a press conference and said, don't say that. And like, you know, he tried to kind of poo-poo that because he didn't, you're going to poo-poo it when somebody puts you up with those guys. But I always describe him as the father of the modern day Celtic.
Yeah. Yeah, there was the Celtic pre-Fergus and the Celtic post-Fergus.
Yeah. Yeah.
When my mate was putting that 500 quid in the postbox.
I don't think many like them.
If you'd have said to him, see if you put that envelope in the postbox, within 10 years you'll see Celtic playing a European final.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have believed you.
And get a 9 in a row.
Yeah.
Quadruple trebles or whatever, you know, that bit later on, but, you know, no much further than that. 20 years, within 25 years you'll see, what's 17 titles or 18 titles or something.
Yeah. So he built the foundations.
Yes, yes.
Anyway, with that, Andrew, H.
H is back.
The H is back. I'll say thanks very much.
Thanks.
So I hope you enjoyed that podcast with Andrew H. Smith. There definitely will be a lot more along later because we've already got recorded with Susie McCabe, Ken McCluskey, Eric Sviatchenko, Barry Smith, Billy Stark and others. We'd be grateful if you could rate our standard free-to-air podcast. Helps people find it. Also, if you've got friends who like listening to the podcast and haven't yet subscribed to theCelticUnderground.substack.com, then give them a nudge. Tell them it's value for money. Well, I hope you think it's value for money. Anyway, with the written and audio and video stuff that you get. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady. That was him, Andrew H. Smith, saying good night and God bless. Good night. Bring me sunshine, bring me love. Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. This world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.